Stephen Zunis, welcome to KBOO.
Great to be with you again.
Stephen Zunis studies and writes on the international system and its politics. He specializes in the Middle East, also U.S. foreign policy, and strategic nonviolent action. He teaches at the University of San Francisco, coordinates its program in Middle Eastern studies. He's active. He writes. His best-known book is Tinderbox, U.S. Foreign Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. Stephen Zunis, how do you understand, what are the factors behind the torture murder of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi by the Saudi Arabian secret apparatus?
It appears to be comparable to, I guess, the murders some Russian agents have done, apparently, to dissident journalists and others, and those in inner circles who effectively go in exile and defect and say critical things about the regime. They wanted to set an example. They wanted to make sure to be a deterrent, I guess, to other dissident voices, especially those that are articulate and have a following. And of course, they thought they could get away with it. I mean, this is a regime that has gotten away with this terror bombing of Yemen, which is responsible for tens of thousands of civilian deaths. You know, they're responsible, you know, for the brutal crushing of the pro-democracy movement in Bahrain, the siege and threats against Qatar, not to mention the incredibly brutal internal repression. This is a regime that's gotten away with all sorts of things, and they figured they could probably get away with murdering this dissident journalist.
Yeah, and they also, part of the reason they thought they could get away with it is because they've received so much support from the Trump administration in every conceivable way. Trump is so proud of his having sold he inflates the figure, but billions and billions and billions of dollars of armaments and everything else. He's a great businessman, and he keeps announcing that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, presidents of both parties, of course, have sold hundreds of billions of dollars of armaments and other security assistance to the Saudis. Politically well-connected corporations like Bechtel, which is based here in San Francisco and has close ties to the Republican Party. They've overseen some of the huge mega construction projects as the kingdom has built up its infrastructure. You know, there's a lot of money to be made, though I should also mention that these arms sales are subsidized in terms of the air shows, subsidies, all sorts of various credits and the like at taxpayer expense. So in certain ways, it's not just Saudi money coming in. It's, the U.S. taxpayer is also helping this relationship as well. It's not that these aren't arms grants like U.S. provides to Israel and Egypt, it's certainly, something that our tax dollars go to support to some degree as well.
It seems to me previous administrations were very supportive of Saudi Arabia, but they also made some kinds of efforts to keep them from, and especially to keep their the radical plutocratic militarists in Saudi Arabia in check to some extent, and also to try and persuade them to stop funding Islamic radicalism around the world, which they've always failed in, of course.
I do think you're correct that there is a qualitative shift under Trump to be much more effusive and unconditional in praise of the regime. It's the first country that Trump visited after he became president. And generally, we've seen other parts of the world as well, Trump's support for autocrats, and you can't get much more autocratic than the Saudi regime.
Than the new Saudi regime, yeah. Apparently, a couple days ago in Montana, he saluted their congressional candidate there who body slammed, attacked, was found criminally responsible, but just a misdemeanor. A journalist, a interviewer, who didn't like the question, and he treated the journalist as the enemy of the people and purveyors of fake news and evil, and he loved this guy who attacked the journalist. This is just after the Saudi apparatus had killed, and there's killing going all over the world, actually, of journalists. Mexico is probably the king of killing, but the Russians do pretty good, too, of critics.
It was rather shocking that he would explicitly, not just support a candidate who did that, but actually praise the candidate for having done so.
Yeah.
He's my kind of guy, you know, for committing an act of assault and battery against a journalist who simply asked a question that he didn't like. The Guardian newspaper, for whom the journalist was working, issued a formal announcement, as did the British government, which is where the Guardian is. Guardian's based in England. I mean, it would be shocking in any case, but particularly on the throes of Khashoggi's murder. I think it's underscores the autocratic mindset that Trump carries. And I should mention an interesting little tidbit that hasn't gotten as much attention as it should about Khashoggi, was that he was dismissed from his post as an editor in Saudi Arabia and ended up going into exile, not for criticizing the Saudi regime, which came later, but an article of his, this is back in December 2016, when Trump was president-elect, criticizing Trump's Middle East policy. That's what got the Saudis upset and started to crack down on him and then forcing him into exile. And so one has to wonder if the cavalier attitude that Trump has been taking regarding Khashoggi and the murder and his, seeming acceptance of the Saudi version of events and trying to take the blame away from the crown prince and other people at the top who appear to have indeed been responsible. I mean, it may be indicative that he's been mad at Khashoggi for criticizing him.
Yeah, he really does. He cannot take critique, and he is furious and vicious, and now he has the power to kill people. This is KABU Radio, 90.7 FM. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Stephen Zunis. He's a foreign policy writer and teaches at the University of San Francisco, also advocates, and we'll talk about the power of resistance and nonviolent resistance to topple these dictators in various places. His best-known book is Tinderbox, U.S. Foreign Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. Stephen Zunis, tell us about Saudi Arabia, Saudi Arabian politics, the ascent of the current crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. It seems to me it arises out of Saudi Arabian domestic problems as well as international problems. In some ways, they're getting cornered, and they were getting cornered by the Arab Spring, and they were frightened. And his aging father, the king, who apparently is extremely ill with one or another form of dementia, appointed this Mohammed as his successor. Tell us about what's happening in Saudi Arabia and why they're in such trouble in the long run. In the short run, they look sort of powerful. At least they can kill vast numbers of children in Yemen and other places. But in many ways, they're weak, particularly in the long run around the future of Saudi Arabia.
King Salman is the last of a series of brothers and half-brothers who have ruled Saudi Arabia for decades. And Mohammed, his son, is only 33 years old. And it really is the power behind the throne, really is the de facto ruler of the country. So he is of this younger generation who, has made a number of minor reforms, trying to clean up some of the corruption, at least when it involves rivals within the royal family and the elites.
Well, he's actually shaken them down, right? He imprisoned many of them and would not allow them out of this.
Mass arrest. At least one person was tortured to death. That was an army captain. Yeah, the way he went about it, it was highly questionable. But on a seemingly anti-corruption purge, which Trump has praised, he's also, for the first time, allowed women to drive, but while at the same time imprisoning leading women's rights activists, including those who were leading in that movement. He's also opened the first movie theater and allowed for a little more Western music and things like that to come in. So in doing all this sort of thing, he's been challenging some of the more reactionary Salafist clerics. And because of all these things, he's gotten great praise of, and the not just from Trump, but in the Western media. I mean, he 60 Minutes did a puff piece on him a few months ago, and there have been various articles in major newspapers and magazines that were similarly a positive. Oh, here's the young reformer taking the kingdom into the 21st century. Da da da. And basically, we're it's very embarrassing for the United States, frankly, to support such an absolute monarchy like that. I mean, remember, the United States was like the first country to really have have a Republican revolution against an absolute monarchy, and this is something every kid in school learns about, right? The American Revolution, everything, and here we are in 21st century, 250 years after the Revolutionary War. And the United States is the world's number one backer of the world's remaining absolute monarchies, including that of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, and not to mention the dictatorships that the non-monarchical army dictatorships that are powerful.
Supporting authoritarianism in general is pretty bad, but it's particularly ironic, given U.S. history, that we are friends with these family dictatorships, these hereditary autocracies.
Right. Stephen,
and Saudi Arabia is among the worst, and the double standards and the hypocrisy of American policy is extreme.
This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole talking to Stephen Zunis. We're talking about Saudi Arabia, the United States, the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. Let's get Stephen to Trump and Mohammed bin Salman, the new crown prince, very, very aggressive and murderous, and quote the reformer, who also is somewhat popular, particularly with young people in Saudi Arabia. Apparently, they really go to the movie houses and like to now listen to once banned music. It seems to me that Saudi Arabia is in deep trouble, and we really have to talk about that. One of them is the Shiite rebellion that Iran supports, like the compromise between Shiites and Sunnis in Lebanon, which was supported actually by Syria, another enemy of the United States. Tell us about the problems that Saudi Arabia faces. One of them is from the Shiite rebellion throughout the Middle East. But another one is their long-term problem. They're so dependent on oil, and climate change is going to wipe out there. They had some agriculture. It's going to wipe them out. It seems to me that Saudi Arabia is going to get so hot that it's going to become impossible to actually produce things or live. Tell us about the long-term environmental problems of Saudi Arabia.
Well, the whole Middle East, like the rest of the world, climate change is having an impact. And in the Middle East, we are seeing increasing drought and higher temperatures. And despite our stereotype of Saudi Arabia as desert, most of it is desert, there are areas in the eastern mountains where there is some agriculture. And the drought and other problems, of course, has contributed to the instability in Yemen, where Saudi Arabia has gotten embroiled in that civil war. But Saudi Arabia, of course, is a major emitter of carbon through its petroleum industry that the United States and other Western nations have encouraged by buying their oil for many, many years. The Saudis, with their wealth, have built these incredible modern cities with everything air conditioned and fancy, and it's such that many Saudis don't have to actually be outside in the heat. But you got to wonder how sustainable that's going to be in the long term. And again, the slight rise in temperatures in a place that's already one of the hottest in the world is going to be disastrous by any way you look at it.
This is your Old Mole Variety Hour. Bill Resnick here for The Mole, talking to Stephen Zunis. We've been discussing the murder of journalist, Jamal Khashoggi. It arises out of a lot of things, and then we've spoken about them. Stephen, it seems to me that if Trump and Mohammed bin Laden, MBS, Mr. Boone saw after the dismemberment of Khashoggi, what's become his nickname, if those people stay in power for very long, there's the planet's in deep trouble and the Middle East is in deep trouble. They may not, though. It seems to me there's lots of possibilities that they would be displaced, but that would not be enough. It seems to me we really have to move towards a very different way of using the vast wealth we have available to deal with fulminating climate change in a relatively short time. It seems to me, though, that there are movements now. More and more people are beginning to understand that there are movements all over the world. You talk about mass movements and mass nonviolence being able to bring down regimes. It's not inconceivable that at some point fairly soon, when the people wake up to the threat to them and their children and grandchildren, that is the climate threat and other threats of totalitarianism, that we could see those movements. Why don't you expand on those ideas?
Yeah. Well, first of all, man, I think among the obvious benefits of going to more towards renewable energy, you know, such as solar and wind and others, that the demand for oil is dropping. And Saudi Arabia is not near the largest country in the Middle East in terms of population, but it's powerful because of the oil wealth and because so much money has been transferred from Western nations that consume oil to the Saudi royal family, and they've gotten this wealth and power as a result. And I think as we spend less money on oil, even before they run out of it, there's going to be a reduction in their kind of power and influence. They will not be able to buy off the Saudi population completely. I think one problem is that, as you know, I am a great advocate of the power of strategic nonviolent action to bring down authoritarian regimes. I've written about such struggles around the world, and particularly in the Middle East. And we saw how in Yemen, there was a pro-democracy movement that ousted their dictator, but unfortunately, U.S.-Saudi deal ended up putting in the dictator's vice president, a general, General Hadi, who ended up creating such a mess that you had the Houthi rebellion, the Saudi intervention, and all the horror that has gone down subsequently. But you've seen popular movements in Kuwait lead that monarchy to open up to an extraordinary degree to, while still semi-authoritarian, far more open and liberal than most countries in that part of the world. We saw the movement in Bahrain almost succeed were it not for the Saudi intervention. So we are seeing some signs of change within the peninsula. Unfortunately, I think Saudi Arabia is going to be one of the last to change, in part because of their enormous wealth, being able to buy off dissent to some degree. Another problem is what dissent there is often even more hardline Islamists, which leads many Saudis to think, well, better to have a semi-reformist autocrat like Mohammed bin Salman than to let the real crazies take over. And that sort of kept some people in line as well. But I think we do have a young population, which, like young Arabs elsewhere, is more literate, more worldly, more secular, has more democratic impulses. And I do think as this generation gets older, they're going to be starting to put more and more pressure on change. And so I do think we will see some major shifts in Saudi Arabia eventually, but it's going to take a while. I mean, the bigger question in the short term is if the international community lives up to its responsibilities and really tries to distance itself from Saudi Arabia, if there are some clear losses in terms of sanctions, in terms of arms transfers, and in terms of not going to these big fancy meetings and these big juicy contracts and that kind of thing. If Saudi Arabia starts really feeling the heat, I can imagine in some kind of internal coup of some more moderate, less repressive forces taking place. But I think in the long term we'll see even greater change because the kind of system they have there just is not sustainable on a whole number of levels.
Stephen Zunis, thanks so much for talking to us. Keep up your writing and activism and struggles. Thank you.
Well, my pleasure.
Okay.